Episode 122 of the State of the Old Republic podcast was originally recorded on December 31st, 2023. It's the State of the Old Republic podcast. This week on the show, Game Update 7.4, Chains in the Dark is now live. I'll talk a little about the story, Kessin's Landing, and the new gear grind. Also this week, Star Wars The Old Republic turns 12. I'll talk about what that means, what kind of year the game had, and where it might be headed in 2024. And finally this week, Galactic Seasons 5 is winding down. I finished it a few weeks ago, and I'll share my thoughts on this latest season. And with that, it's time to make the jump to lightspeed.
And cue the moron.
Welcome to episode 122 of the State of the Old Republic podcast. I'm your host, Ted, and as you heard in the opening, I have a great show lined up for you today. Now, you've heard me say it before, and I'll probably have to say it again, but it's been a minute since I last did a podcast. I plan to get back on track in 2024. It will likely be February when I find that rhythm, but I'll try and get more than just this episode to you before then. Well, that's the future. Let's talk about the present. There's a lot happening in the Old Republic right now. SWTOR turned 12, Game Update 7.4 Chains in the Dark is live, and there are a number of events and cartel market specials which are now winding down. But let's start with Game Update 7.4, Chains in the Dark. If you were worried that the transition from BioWare to Broadsword was going to be like the Millennium Falcon navigating an asteroid field, it hasn't felt that way. At worst, it's been more like that time the Falcon exited hyperspace at Alderaan, and even that's a bit of a stretch. Other than the logo on the new key art, it sure feels like business as usual for Star Wars The Old Republic. Game Update 7.4, Chains in the Dark, is the latest update for the game. It continues the story that began with Legacy of the Sith. Well, actually, the story began much sooner than that. I'm not going to break down the story right now, mainly because I haven't gotten through it all. I know it's not that long, but I've been busy doing so many other things in the game. What I will say is that with both Chains in the Dark and Old Wounds, I like what they're doing. I like the cinematics that tell the story but don't involve our characters. Some tend to be a little long, but they're very good. And I like what they're able to do now in these cinematics. There's more animation with monitors, screens, and other objects. The lighting is improved. They're doing more with camera angles. It's a big improvement from where they started 12 years ago. Now, like previous updates, once you finish the story, Game Update 7.4 includes a new daily area, this time on Ord Mantell. I've mentioned this before, but the world building, probably going all the way back to Ossus, has been next level, and Kessin's Landing is no exception. It's set at nighttime, which I think was a great choice, and it's nice to go back and see these familiar worlds and literally view them in a new light. And then the town itself just looks terrific. There's tons of detail. Everywhere I look, I see something that I wish was a decoration that I could put in my strongholds. It just looks gorgeous, and I enjoy being there, and it's really cool that we get to go there on Imperial characters, which we've never been able to do before. As far as the daily area itself, I'd say so far so good. I haven't done it enough yet to form a solid opinion, and develop a routine for completing all the missions. All I can say is I don't hate it. I plan to talk about daily areas in general in a future episode. But comparing all the daily areas created for Legacy of the Sith, I'd say that I like Manon, I like Runic, although that's in big part because you can quick travel everywhere. Without that, I'd still be lost in a tunnel somewhere. I didn't care for Voss all that much, but that's because I just don't like Voss as a planet. Sorry, Eric Musco, I know it's one of your favorites. And as I just said, my first impression of Kessin's Landing is I like it. In addition to tackling daily areas in a future episode, I'll get into the whole story down the road as well. What I will say about the story is this. I do like it, but I also feel like while the individual updates are short, the barrier to entry for characters that haven't kept up or are new is steep. We have to start with Osus, which was released with Game Update 5.10 on December 18th, 2018. That's 5 years ago, folks. Not only is that too much, but the story has been going on for too long. It's rather good, though. If you are fortunate enough to have kept up with the story, you've probably completed everything and are now focusing on the new gear grind. With Game Update 7.4, 344 is the magic number, or is it? I'll tell you what I mean in just a minute, but first I want to get you caught up on some of the holiday events and cartel market specials still happening in the Old Republic. Life Day will run until January 9th. I always found this to be a weird holiday. I hate getting pelted by snowballs, and I don't even like pelting others that much, but you gotta do it if you want any of the cool Life Day stuff, like the new Life Day officer armor introduced this year. The collection unlock sale will end on January 9th. You can unlock any item in your collection for a 50% discount. This is a great deal if you have the cartel coins. I always try and save mine just for this event. The double XP event will end on January 4th. Spent a lot of time this week leveling characters, and I know people have been busy leveling them up on the new APAC server. There are various items that are on sale in the cartel market. They will remain on sale until January 4th, and these include 5-pack of the Major Experience Boosts, Commander's Compendium 3-pack, Master's Datacron and Equipment Bundle, Thexan's Armor Set, Satil Shan's Dual Saber, Darth Nol's Lightsaber, and Tulak Horde's Lightsaber. Additionally, the following items will go on sale over the next few days. These are the Imperial Reaper's Armor Set, which goes on sale January 1st, the Incinerator Weapon Tuning, which goes on sale January 2nd, and the Twisted Fang Lightsaber, which goes on sale, as you probably guessed, January 3rd. The SWTOR 12th anniversary is going on right now, and I believe it will run until the next game update, which could be a while. Be sure to check out the anniversary vendor on the fleets and pick up the best view in SWTOR decorations. Also, if you are missing any of the previous anniversary items, you can purchase those as well. They're all free, by the way. And you can purchase the Droman Kass and Coruscant Strongholds for 12 credits each. And finally, the Rat Ghoul event on Alderaan will run until January 2nd. If you have the mission to recruit Dr. Loken, this is the time to do it, as you can only complete it during a Rat Ghoul event. And there you have it. Those are all the events and celebrations happening in the Old Republic right now. While getting cosmetic gear and having your characters look good is nice, getting powerful gear and having your characters outperform on the battlefield is even better. Game Update 7.4 upped the item rating on gear, and now all players have an opportunity to kit themselves out on 344 Rakata. While that certainly sounds enticing, if you don't run operations, you may not want to pursue that level of gear right off the bat or at all. I think for solo players, of which I am one, 340 moddable gear from Aiden Zeke will be the way to go. Now, how does that work? Well, it works a lot like it has been. Hyde and Zeke now offer prototype, which is blue quality, armorings, hilts, barrels, mods, and enhancements with an item rating of 340. To unlock these, you need to upgrade one prototype piece of gear to 340 and then deconstruct it. If you've been playing all along, there's a good chance you have an earpiece or relics that are item rating 336. I'd pick one of those items, upgrade it to 340, deconstruct it, wipe your tears at the loss of this gear that you need, and then build your 340 sets. Remember, if you choose to deconstruct an earpiece or relic, you will need to reacquire it and then upgrade that from 324 to 340 in order to use it. That assumes you're just buying the gear from the Flashpoint vendor and not getting it elsewhere. Now, Hide and Seek also offer 340 artifact, that's purple quality, enhancements. To gain access to those, you need to deconstruct an artifact piece of gear with an item rating of 340. For us solo players out there, that has gotten a little bit easier to do, as you can now convert conquest combinations to OP1 combinations, which is the operations currency. The exchange rate, however, is not great. For 2,000 conquest combinations, you get 175 OP1 combinations. That said, you only need 60 of those combinations to upgrade a piece of gear, so 175 is almost 3 upgrades. And with Game Update 7.4, you can also earn the Operations Commendations by running Master Mode chapters for Knights of the Fallen Empire and Knights of the Eternal Throne. And there are some easy and short ones out there. I like to run Fallen Empire chapters 1 and 2. I like chapter 2 a little better because you can skip a lot of the trash and it just boils down to 3 toughish encounters. I find the last boss be pretty easy as long as you interrupt Terrible Shout or get out of its range. And what I like about Chapter 2 is, even though you don't have a companion, Valkorion does help you out a little bit and will heal you from time to time. Chapter 1 isn't that hard either, but you must run most of it without a companion, and I've noticed that the Sky Troopers can sometimes get lucky and hit you with crits, and I've died to that. Later in the chapter, you do get Darth Maar as a companion, but if he's not at a high enough influence level, he may not be that helpful. I run these on an Arsenal Merc. I have Maar to influence level 45, and I found that putting him in the tank role for the final droid encounter works best for me. Still a little tough. Now, if you do unlock the 340 artifact enhancement in hopes that you'd get more crit, alacrity, or accuracy than you do from the prototype enhancements, you don't. It's the same amount for prototype and artifact, and that's 614. What is different is the amount of endurance and power that you get. For the prototype enhancements, you get 452 endurance, which is your health, and then you get 413 power. With the artifact enhancements, those numbers are swapped. You get 413 endurance and 452 power. The artifact enhancements cost 200,000 credits versus 100,000 credits for the prototype enhancements. A couple of other things to remember. Implants can now be upgraded to 340. And they cost mainly tech fragments, so you can kind of work on all of your upgrades at the same time. Now, if you do decide to chase after the 344 Rakata gear, remember it's static gear. That means you will want to grab pieces intended for other combat styles so your stats are more balanced. And one final thing to note, when you go to upgrade a piece of gear, remember to remove any augments that you're using. If you don't, they will get destroyed when you purchase the upgrade. So that's the basics on chasing gear in 7.4, mainly if you're a solo player. I think if you run ops, it may be a grind, but probably a lot more straightforward. Whatever path you're on, happy hunting. Of magic numbers, Star Wars The Old Republic turned 12 this year. Now, ever since the hype that surrounded the 10th anniversary, BioWare and now Broadsword have downplayed the subsequent anniversaries. Keith Koenig did take a moment to acknowledge the milestone and recap everything the team accomplished in 2023. I'm grateful for that because I wanted to do a SWTOR year in review, and Keith saved me the trouble of having to remember everything that they did. In 2023, the SWTOR team delivered 2 major game updates, 7.3 Old Wounds and 7.4 Chains in the Dark, and they delivered two minor updates with 7.21 and 7.31. When I look back at the updates, I see two broad categories for everything that was delivered: modernization and content. Under modernization, there was the release of the 64-bit game client, migration of the game servers to the cloud, the opening of a new game server in the APAC region, and then updates to the environment and cinematic lighting. That's probably my favorite. I'm not going to downplay the importance of modernizing a 12-year-old game, but changes like the 64-bit client and migration of servers to the cloud tend to go unnoticed unless something goes completely wrong. They don't affect what we do or how we play the game. Even the improvements to the environment and cinematic lighting, which look amazing, start to become just part of the game. We get used to it very quickly, forget it's there, and take it for granted. Of all the modernization changes, the new APAC server is probably the most impactful. It made the game more accessible to a different region of the world, and it gave players an opportunity to get a fresh start with the game. Without the ability to transfer characters to that server, you are forced to create a new character with no credits, no legacy, no perks. There may be species locks for certain classes, and cosmetic options may not be available for your characters either. I'll admit, I gave it a look, and when I realized that I no longer had the conveniences I've become accustomed to, that fresh start quickly became a fresh stop. Now, in terms of content, we got two Galactic Seasons, 4 and 5, and two PvP Seasons, 2 and 3. There were two big story updates, one new flashpoint, two new daily areas, and a new world boss. That was all of the new stuff that gave us something to do and affected how we played the game and what we did in the game. There were big changes to the economy, and there was a major overhaul of the Galactic Trade Network. There was class balancing, changes to gear, and new items to purchase from the cartel market, many of them pretty good. I don't know how the transition to Broadsword impacted the release cycles, but I think two major content updates in a year is a little low. I really think that three would be better. And in fact, if you look back to 2022, there were three major updates. There was the expansion release, 7.1, and 7.2. Although, if you remember, the expansion was supposed to be released at the end of 2021. So perhaps moving forward, two major content updates a year and two minor ones are what we can expect. Which brings me to looking ahead to 2024. In his 12th anniversary message, Keith talked about some of their near-term plans, starting with game update 7.4.1, where he wrote, "With our next release in 7.4.1, we are doing something pretty cool in Galactic Seasons 6. The story and primary reward of the season will take you back to a location that you haven't been to in quite some time, and it has quite a view." Just for historical reference, I believe the last time Keith hinted at a location with quite a view was in reference to a new Hutball battleground, which ended up being on Vanden. Vanden seems like an odd place to return to, so I'm not 100% convinced that's it, but we'll see. Keith went on to write, "As we look beyond 7.4.1 and into 7.5, we have some new things planned for our players. I checked in with Lane Vizsla, and she thinks that her steady progress on the Basilisk War Droid prototype could come to a meaningful conclusion, or new beginning, around that time. I have so many more things I want to tell you about with the upcoming releases and everything else we have planned for next year with story and events. But alas, today is celebration of our 12th anniversary. I wanted to make sure to leave you with a few nuggets to chew on over the holidays. When we get back from the holiday break, we'll be preparing for a 7.4.1 live stream that we are tentatively scheduling for February 14th. This live stream will focus mostly on 7.4.1, where we will give you a glimpse of everything that is coming in that update. We'll also share an early sneak peek of game update 7.5 as well." So a potential live stream on Valentine's Day to preview 7.4.1 means that we probably won't get an update to SWTOR until sometime in March. It won't be a story update, but will be the start of the next Galactic Season. We also know from earlier messages from Keith that in addition to 7.5, there will be a 7.6. Will there be an expansion right after that, or will we see 7.7 and beyond? I have no idea. But based on the 2023 release schedule, it looks like 2024 could be similar. We'll see 7.41 in March, possibly 7.5 in June, maybe 7.51 in September, and then 7.6 to close out the year in December. The content we've seen is good, the game is fun, the story and cinematics keep getting better and better. The pace is just slow. The idea that this time next year we could still be chasing after Hedda Kohl and not know anything more about Darth Rivix doesn't give me the warm fuzzies. With that said, I am excited that SWTOR turned 12, and I do look forward to seeing what they deliver in 2024 and beyond. Galactic Seasons 5 is still going on. There are around 20 days to get everything done. My season ended about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And by end, I mean I completed the meta achievement that requires you to max out the reputation and complete 100 objectives. And of course, reach level 100. I thought the season was pretty good. It was the first one where they didn't give us a companion. I'm not surprised by that because I didn't think giving us a companion each season was sustainable. I just wish they hadn't made that decision in a season where they introduced a cool-looking astromech character. I really liked the look of the astromech, and I would have used it with a lot of my characters. And just to put it in perspective, the only other astromech companion in the game is T7, and I never use T7. I don't care for him, but this one I liked and would have used quite a bit, but I get it. As for the other rewards, the mounts were fine. I don't find myself using them all that much. I like the creature mounts more than the tanks. My favorite Galactic Season mount is the Triumbra, which was the final reward from Galactic Season 3, and I use that all the time on a lot of my characters. One thing about the level 100 mounts is that they have a built-in minimum speed of 110%. They, of course, scale to your piloting speed, but they're nice for those characters who are too low for speeder piloting 3. I like the armor sets from this season more than I've liked the ones from previous seasons. I haven't used them on any character yet, but I probably will. I thought the team did a nice job with this season's rewards. And then there was the Loth Kitten. They probably could have made that the prime reward, and we wouldn't have complained too much. As far as the story goes, I wasn't into it. I don't mind stories that are humorous or on the lighter side, but I just didn't enjoy this one. When I think of a good story that's light and humorous in SWTOR, I look no further than the HK-55 bonus story. That was a great story. Overall, I enjoyed this Galactic season. As I said, I liked the rewards, and I thought the season-specific objective to cause mayhem in the cantinas was a nice diversion. What I don't like, though, about these seasons is the grind that ensues after you reach reward level 100. You still have to do a few weeks of objectives to max out the reputation and complete the meta achievement. Once I reach level 100, my enjoyment for the season wanes. I don't know what the solution is for that, and I certainly don't expect season 6 to be any different. And to be fair, the season objectives are the best way to earn reputation tokens. I just don't like that the season ends with a bit of an uphill climb. Once I complete the rewards track, the fun factor for these galactic seasons drops precipitously. I am enjoying the break from season 5, but I'm also looking forward to season 6. I think Broadsword has struck a good balance here with galactic seasons. I've enjoyed it since season 1 and will continue to enjoy it moving forward. I think it's been a great addition to the game. Speaking of great additions to the game, a few months back, I was running heroic missions on Coruscant, and I couldn't help but notice some improvements to the mission Face the Merchants. This mission requires you to kill some specific Black Sun NPCs to obtain a clinic pass key, and there's also a bonus mission to kill 15 of them. The problem was, there weren't many of these NPCs, and they were on a 5-minute respawn timer, and I know this because I timed it. This created a huge bottleneck when there were multiple players trying to do the mission, and there were always multiple players trying to do the mission. Well, someone at Broadsword got the bright idea to decrease the spawn rate of the NPCs, and they also got the bright idea to add more NPCs to the area. I never saw this in a patch note, so whoever snuck this change into the game, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. And that's the state of the Old Republic for today. Let me cut in the sublight engines and cue the music and congratulate you on surviving another half hour listening to episode 122 of the State of the Old Republic podcast. I'm your host, Ted, and I thank you for tuning in. You can find this podcast on Buzzsprout, and iTunes, and wherever else you find your podcasts. You can also listen to the show directly from the show site, which is sotorpodcast.com, and there is an RSS feed where you can subscribe to the podcast directly. If you have a question for the show, you can email me at sotorpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Have a happy new year, and I will be back in 2024. Until then, remember the Sith code, cake is a lie.